People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. We're going to be talking about Cape Town Opera today and the exciting year ahead for them. And recently, some 4 years ago, they acquired a new CEO, the head of opera, and his name is Alex Gabriel, who's a musician in his own right and with years of experience combining this art, opera, with business. He's well equipped to drive decision-making to ensure a prosperous future for Cape Town Opera, and he's impressed by the can-do attitude of the organization's teams and looks forward to putting his own unique skill set to good use. And Alex, welcome. Alex Gabriel, welcome.
Thanks, Rodney. Wonderful to be on your show. Thanks for the invitation.
It seems as though you've been here less time. You say it's 4 years.
Well, time does tend to sort of go faster than one thinks. I don't know what that means. I said that to my daughter this morning, in fact, as we got in the car. I said, jeepers creepers, it's going quickly. And, you know, expectation is obviously
something else. Wrong. They say the older you get, the quicker the time goes.
It really does feel that way. You
know. But it's 4 years, so you must have come here in the middle of COVID.
I did, which was just a brilliant, brilliant career move, wasn't it? COVID and the arts, yeah.
Where did you come from?
So I was working, I had worked for 14 years with a very small firm that worked in financial services. I was a director there, and it was just, I just felt it was time for a change. And then this opportunity presented itself. I think I saw it on a newsletter, and I didn't initially react to it, I have to say. And then my wife pointed it out to me. She said, this is perfect for you. These are all the things you love doing. And I thought more and more about it, and then I got really excited about it, and then, yeah, the rest is history.
My goodness, that is quite a, first of all, quite a change of subject, quite a change of profession.
It is. But the things I studied music is absolutely the core of my being. Mm-hmm. I have this other interest, which is current affairs. I love current affairs, and I used to love unit trusts. I would read all the performance reports of the asset managers, which is why I ended up going into that, that field. But the music's always been number one, really, and I think it was just there were many things that called me about the position. You know, being involved with artists again and a much bigger group of people and the chance to do something,
And, I mean, you studied music. You've got a Master of Music degree.
Yes, I studied piano with a focus on accompaniment.
Right. And you are still playing. You still play the
piano. I do my level best.
You do concerts and things.
I do. It's tough. You know, I mean, if I get an hour a day that I carve out to practice, which is not really ideal, but it's what I can do. And mm-hmm. I tend to focus on doing something with somebody, you know, so it forces you to be prepared properly. And I've managed to keep it going now for 20 years with not officially being, you know, playing piano sort of all day.
Yeah.
And I have kept it going, and I'm pleased about that. I love it. Yeah. But I can't take everything on. I choose my things quite carefully, but enjoy it very much.
Because presumably the job of CEO of Cape Town Opera has huge demands on you and your time.
It has huge demands. It really does. But yeah, I mean, I've managed it thus far, and hopefully I'll be able to keep doing it.
It hasn't gone under just yet.
It has, yeah.
In fact, would I be right in saying that it's having a bit of a heyday? It's really on a roll, isn't it? The company, Cape Town.
Oh, I'm always like, you know, I don't want to, you know, talk it up too much, but I do feel, I feel very positive about where we are, where we've come from. You know, as we mentioned, COVID. I remember the first opera we did after I joined, which was Hansel and Gretel. It was at the stage where we could only have 50 people there, which was, you know, I mean, let alone the financial disaster that is, but also to have these people that have worked so hard to put this beautiful show together, to have only 50 people watch it. I don't think the audience realizes always how critical they are to the show.
Absolutely.
Like the show is the audience in a way. Mm. And yeah, so that was quite demoralizing, and obviously financially it was tricky. I mean, all the arts organizers, all everybody really. I wouldn't have wanted to be in any industry really, but it was tough. But we've understood what the situation was, and we've slowly built capacity in the right ways. I feel strongly about that, and I feel good. I mean, we've also had, I don't know if it's luck or we've got people supporting us. You can't do it without them. I'm very mindful, and you know that can change in a heartbeat. So it's always going to be that. I'm very aware of it. But certainly I think what we're doing is very good. We're doing My Fair Lady at the moment. It's selling like hotcakes. It's a wonderful show.
But it did so well here in Cape Town.
It did extremely well.
And now
well.
Is it doing as well in Johannesburg?
It's doing extremely well. We're very happy. Yeah, wow. Especially, particularly the weekends. And the reports of the show have been so encouraging. So, you know, there's a sense of, wow, look at that, look at that. Last year we did, in fact, I'm very proud of this, we did 203 performances last year in total, wow. Across the board.
That is a lot.
Which is extraordinary. That's like one every 2 days. Like, that's how hard we're working. And I think people notice that, and I think that inspires the funders. So it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a self-reinforcing.
And also, apparently, quite good houses. There were. I know My Fair Lady was virtually full for the whole run.
Yeah, Rodney, I'm going to be honest. I would love the opera houses to be fuller. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of work we need to do on that front, but we're doing it slowly. You know, some people are quite terrified of opera, which I understand. The image of it can be quite intimidating. It's long and it's, you know, you sort of picture a Viking helmet and someone singing for 5 hours. So
you're not being rude about Wagner, are you? Any remote chance?
No, but it's just, you know, it's no, funny. I speak to people and, you know, their reaction is either they love it and they will absolutely be at every show, or they won't come at all. They don't dip their toe in it. So that's tricky for us, but we are. I think it's getting better and better, and we just have to plug away. And because when people do come, then they say, "Oh, I wish I'd known about this before. I love it so much."
Yes, and you said a little earlier that you love accompanying singers. Now, did you like opera before you took on this job, or is that a stupid question?
Oh, this is a loaded question, Rodney. I'm going to disappoint everybody. I obviously did love opera, but it wasn't. I wouldn't say it was my number one love in life. I loved art song the most, actually, though. So, which is music written based on poetry, like, you know,
the Schubert's Lieder
or whatever, written specifically for piano and voice. That was really the stuff that floated my boat, as it were. Yeah. But I loved working with instrumentalists, and I accompanied a lot of singers. So I did a lot of arias. I've learned a lot about opera as I've gone along, but it wasn't unfamiliar to me, obviously. But it wasn't necessary. I wouldn't say it was the reason. Working with singers was something that I always really, really enjoyed. Yeah.
Now, Alex, let's have your first piece of music. And I see it's something vocal. Tell me about it, the Mozart Mass in C minor.
Yeah, so, you know, when you asked for the five, you know, give me your five Desert Island discs, you know, Mozart, I'm going to, you know, I'm sure everyone understands this that loves music, is like, my top three are about a top 100. Like, every time you hear something, you go, oh, that has to be my top. So I say this with all due regard to that, is that I have a long list of top fives, and it's a lot longer than five. But what I can definitely say is that Mozart is, I think for me, has always been number one, so that's why I had to pick a Mozart piece. I've always just loved everything, from the piano concertos to the operas. It's just, he just is something very special. In my nerdy heyday, when I was very young and the Oxford Street HMV was still open, I used to love going there when I got to London on the off chance and go and pick out things that. And I remember buying the box set of the masses, which was it's enormous. I mean, he wrote many, many masses. So this is probably the greatest one of them all. It's incomplete, like the Requiem. He didn't finish it, but it is so deep and such a wonderful piece. And the section I've picked is the Domine, which is part of the Gloria. So some of the masses are through composed Glorias, but this one is on such a large scale that he actually broke down sections of it and composed each differently. And it's for two sopranos and orchestra, and it's just absolutely beautiful. So, yeah.
Thank you.
that remarkable work by Mozart, the Mass in C minor. We heard the Domine movement there, and you heard Sylvia McNair and Diana Montague with John Elliott Gardiner and the English Baroque Orchestra. The first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Alex Gabriel, who is the CEO of Cape Town Opera. And as we said, Alex, Cape Town Opera is doing very well, and you've got a very exciting year ahead of you as well, would you say?
Yes, we have a very exciting year ahead of us. I think the we've got the Shorts Festival coming up. It's a festival of short operas.
Yes, and it it's quite an innovation, isn't it? And it worked well last year.
Yeah, so our artistic director, Magdalene Minar, this was something she instituted last year. We did it at the Artscape Arena last year, just as a trial, which is a very small theater. It's about 150 seats.
Yes.
We did three productions. This time we're doing – it's five separate productions plus two workshops. And the idea of it is to try and – it's twofold. It's to try and build a slightly different audience for Cape Town Opera. So that's the idea with it being short. So it's a different experience from coming to the Artscape and watching a 2 or 3 hour work.
Yes, you've got quite an interesting venue this year, haven't
you? Yes, it's the Wave Theatre in Long Street. So that's kind of part of it, in that we're trying to get perhaps younger people that might want to try it. Every production or work that we put on is an hour or less. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I think that's a key element to it, is the short. And the other nice thing about them is that we are then able to experiment with new works, because that's really important for us, is that we need to be developing new composers, new opera, new librettists. That's part of the workshop
so
element of it.
So is each of these short operas a new work?
No, they're not all new works, but it gives us the opportunity to do a new work. So, for example, last year we did The Trial, which is an opera written by Conrad Assmann, about the trial of Oscar Pistorius.
Oh, yes.
And he'd obviously scored it for full orchestra and the works. But we do this on a far smaller scale. It's much more contained. So it means it's less expensive, effectively. But
yes,
it also, you know, we've got to start small and put the works out there and build up the audiences and things like that. So that's the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm. And that's quite soon now, isn't it?
It is. It, in fact, starts on the 7th of March and it runs until the 16th.
Okay. Yeah. At this venue?
At the Wave Theatre. And it's got a tiger's milk, I think, underneath it or on top of it. I haven't actually been. And it's on Long Street. So, you know, it's a whole different vibe.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that you'll give it a go.
Absolutely. And the main thing, as you say, is to get new people who have not been to opera before to come and not have to sit through a five-hour Wagner opera, for example.
It's exactly that. It's just that it's trying to take a little bit of that intimidation factor away, and also something new. It's a little bit more on the edges of the artistic world. So, you know, like a first Thursday type thing. You know,
yes,
audiences that might give that a go.
And give a sort of little something different to look forward to.
Exactly.
In your schedule.
Exactly.
But now with the year ahead, there are the usual great – I know you're doing an Aida, which is always a huge crowd puller.
Indeed. I'm hoping it's a huge crowd puller. So that is our big production for the year. This is going to be directed by our artistic director, Magdalene Minar. It's her vision of this opera, which is futuristic. I think it's set in 3000 and whenever.
Really?
It is all African. Yeah, she's had this in her mind, I think, for a very long time. And so we are doing it, and it's going to be very exciting. We're talking about filming it as well.
Wow.
So we're very excited about that. That's in May. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we're doing Barber of Seville.
Yes, another huge popular one.
Huge popular one. We are doing that at the Peter Turin Theatre in Theatre on the Bay in Camps Bay.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is interesting.
On a much smaller stage.
Much smaller stage, much smaller scale.
Oh.
It's a full opera, but with piano, but with full cast, the works. The idea there, it's about finding venues, and, you know, Artscape is very busy, so we can't always get a slot. And so this seemed perfect. And we've done a Donizetti opera there, Elisir d'Amore. We did that about 2 years ago. And was an enormous success.
Yeah,
again, also had a different audience. It had a different feel. You're getting the full opera, the full experience, but in a different context, which is also lovely. So we're very excited about that.
Gosh, it sounds very exciting. Mm. One of the things I was thinking, it's the same as the orchestra. You do need to put on new works, new operas, but at the same time, you still need to have the good old favorites, like Aida and the Barber of Seville. So you have a balancing act to do, don't you?
We do. I would say that it's probably harder for us to do a new full-scale opera just because the cost of opera is so high.
Mm.
You know, if you think about it, we have to not only pay the orchestra, which is the cost of the orchestra in itself, it's the sets, the costumes, the stage managers, the crew behind the scenes, you know, it's just a very labor intensive thing to put on. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you can't fill it, and I'm not sure we have the audiences yet, I say yet, to do that, we're very circumspect, which is where the shorts comes in, where we can actually start dipping our toe and building the audiences and getting them excited about new works. But absolutely, that's the direction we're going in. But for now, I think in terms of big main stage things, we would probably stick with, you know, the repertoire that we know will come to.
And you also have very fine singers here in Cape Town, both from a chorus point of view and from principals.
That's the most exciting thing about Cape Town Opera. It's absolutely the best part is that South Africa, I'm not sure everyone who doesn't come to our productions or is not, you know, in that sort of circle, if they're aware of the actual level of singing talent that we have throughout South Africa. I always joke and I say that if it were a rugby team, you know, we would be winning.
That's true.
We would be winning everything.
Yes.
Especially if you consider on a per capita basis. It's just remarkable, the talent in South Africa, which for me is exciting because it means, and this is, well, going to sound a little bit boring, but a critical aspect of evaluating Cape Town Opera's place in South Africa is what are we doing in South Africa? You know, how does this fit? How do you even justify this in a country with, you know, 34% unemployment, that kind of thing, and youth unemployment through the roof? And I can justify it because our singers are incredibly talented and we are creating jobs, you know. So we benefit because we can just hire locally. Obviously, getting someone from overseas, you know, it's not just a case of flying them out and having them for 3 days. They have to come for 2 months. So you have to accommodate them, you have to fly them, and then the fees are in dollars or whatever. I'm not saying we won't do it,
but
it really is a big cost. It's, you know, one has to think about it. It's such a long project, all of these things that we do. And because we have the talent here, we've been, luckily enough, up until now, we've been able to use all our fantastic local talent.
The other nice thing about them, your local talent, is that they're young. They are young people.
They are young, and we always work hard at developing the next generation.
Yeah.
That's also very key. So, we've got two prongs to Cape Town Opera in a way. We have the artistic programs, and then we have our social impact programs, I'm going to call it that, which we've put under a banner called CREATE, which stands for Community Relationships, Education, Access, Training, and Employment. So it's kind of all those social impact things.
Which are so important. They're one of those.
This is not just box ticking for us. It's a critical part of what we do. Sure. And one of the things we do is a thing called Foundation Studio, which is for high school learners that don't have access to singing lessons and music at their schools. So they come here every day. They get fed. They get transported. And just last year, the three matriculants, two of them got accepted to Opera UCT. And one got accepted to medicine. It doesn't matter that he's not singing. It's the confidence that comes from having that opportunity. And another thing, I'm just going to say it also, which I often punt when I talk at events, I say a huge advantage for Cape Town Opera is that if you're a talented singer and you're 16 and we hear you for the first time, you can still be world famous. It's like, it's so unlike pretty much anything else. If you're not playing tennis or the piano or being a ballerina at 5, you know, you're not likely to make it internationally. But that's not the case for singing, because singing, you know, you develop your voice at a much later stage. Mm-hmm. So the work we do, even at a high school level, or the, you know, the schools tours we do and all of that, really has a long-term, or can have a long-term impact.
Let's have another piece of music, Alex. And I see we've got Beethoven, one of his great late string quartets. The one with the cavatina.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to say something provocative and everyone's going to switch off. Like, Beethoven is, you know, I battle with him sometimes. The things I love about him, I love a lot. But there's so many things that people get excited about. And I go, he's just never been my number one. I can't, except that so many of these things aren't.
You can leave now.
Switch off. But I say this, you know, I say this with a wink in the eye. But this is the big but, is that these late string quartets, I think 10-0 is some of the greatest music everyone has ever written. It's just extraordinary. I think he was deaf, I may be wrong, at the time that he wrote these. Yeah, it's the kind of the one I've chosen. It's, you kind of need to switch the lights off and turn it up and be not disturbed and just be with this music. It's that kind of music, but it's just reaches, I think, I don't know, I'm going to sound waffly, but depths, I don't know.
It's the last movement, isn't it, of Opus 130?
It's the fifth movement. It's not, I don't think it's the last one. It's the Grosse Fuge, if I remember, is the last,
yes,
which sounds like Prokofiev. It's just Beethoven, really. It's just the most incredible music.
It's the cavatina from the string quartet.
The cavatina, yeah. And this string quartet, the Lindsays, I think it's one of the most musical renditions I've ever heard of it. It's just very special.
the great Beethoven there. That was the Cavatina from his String Quartet number 13, Opus 130, played by the Lindsay String Quartet, and was the second choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio, brought to you by Petiterin Productions, and his name is Alex Gabriel. Alex, I just want to find out a little bit more about you and your background, this passion for music that you have, and one or two other things that I was surprised to discover. But do you come from a musical family, or what? How did you get into this wonderful business?
I don't come from a musical family at all. I think my dad, who's Austrian, maybe in there somewhere buried deep in the DNA is something. I think he likes Strauss waltzes. That's about it. So how it started actually for me, my mum had a little toy piano that now must be 100 years old. We still have it. It had literally a C major scale, no black keys, so no plus two notes, I think. And I loved that thing, and I used to whack away and, I don't know, try and work out
literally
tunes.
A toy piano.
It's literally, like, it's this big. Yep. It's like, I'm showing, it's 30 centimeters. And I nagged my parents, can I start piano lessons? And they eventually relented. And, you know, there was no one in the family that was playing piano. It was just, oh, it's a phase, you know, kind of thing. I mean, I make it sound like they're not supportive. They were. It was just unusual to them. And eventually then I was on a list and I got to the top of the list, but then we moved to Paul. And then I went to the bottom of the list again. So I only started when I was 9, even though I wanted to start quite earlier. But then I just loved it so much. And the teacher was, oh, this, you know, I actually practice and do the things.
Yes.
And then I was lucky enough to be taken on by Laura Searle at UCT, the great, late, great Laura Searle. And, yeah, and just went from there. And then I studied BMuz piano. But then the working, I never really wanted to do. I don't have the psychology to be a solo. I mean, let alone the talent. You need to be so good. The love was more working with people and, I don't know, working with singers. I loved that. So I kind of just naturally just went that route and then ended with them.
But then how did the financial side come in?
That was always whenever I wasn't practicing piano, I was reading Financial Mail, or, you know, it was just like that was, and I love spreadsheets. I'm such a nerd. And, you know, I think, I mean, and I was teaching a lot, you know, I was living that gig lifestyle, you know, yes. You play and you get and you teach and you do all the things. But obviously, you know, I don't know, I didn't see myself doing that necessarily forever. And I thought, let me explore other things that, you know, that I have other options as a career. Let me put it that way. Like, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I did a thing called the CFA program. You know, the choice at the time was, do I do an MBA or do I do a CFA? And I was quite clear that I was more interested in the actual finance part. That really interested me. And what was nice about doing the CFA program is that you just have to pass 3 exams. How you get there is your issue. You just order the books. They tell you what you need to know. It's very hard. But, you know, that I can work with. Like, so I just sat on my bum for 4 years and got through it. And I really enjoyed it, actually. And then I got offered a job from that, someone who knew me. And then I just stayed for 14 years. I enjoyed that
14
very much.
Years 14 in years. In that world.
In that world, yeah.
But still continuing your piano and singing and accompanying.
Absolutely,
and
kept all of it going. Yeah, I stopped teaching. That was the big thing. I didn't stop, yeah.
Okay. And then that came to the point where you decided you were going to make this big career change.
Well, it wasn't like I wanted a career change. I suppose I was nosing around, you know, just what else is out there. You know, it was just time for a little bit of a... You know, you get stale or whatever it is. And
Was it intimidating to think about coming to Cape Town Opera when you saw the ad that your wife showed you? Did you think, oh, no, I could never do that? Good heavens.
I did initially think that, yes. And then I read the requirements and I thought, oh, my goodness, I don't have any of that. You know, because it looks terrifying. It
yes,
really
do,
is when you
lists.
Read the job description and the responsibility that it is. It is quite intimidating. But, yes, so you're right. I was intimidated. But then you start thinking about it and you go, well, it's not, you know, you don't have to be an expert at absolutely everything. You need to know how to push all the pieces in the same direction and get help where you need it, which I've luckily been able to. And I have an incredibly supportive board, which I think is a huge part of Cape Town Opera's current success. They're extremely helpful and work very hard for the company. So I've had a lot of help.
And you also said, as I was reading out at the beginning here, you have a good team to help you going along, your team in the office.
The team is – the reason Cape Town Opera is doing well is that I have an incredible team. It is absolutely – this is not happening without them. And they all do kind of – you know, because we try and run a very efficient ship. We don't have spare people, just one person to do this and one. We kind of all do everything. And so we're all doing 5 jobs, which is how, kind of how it should be. You know, we're trying to maximize what we get out of each person, you know, right, within reason, I think. And they really are running with it. You know, it's the fact that we did 203 performances.
That's amazing.
It's
that's
just
amazing.
I mean, that tells you we are not slacking.
Now, listen, Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony, a huge favorite of mine, and I gather something of a favorite of yours.
It is.
Is it an understatement?
It is an understatement. And I remember so clearly the first time I heard it, I went to the City Hall. I think it was the then Cape Town Symphony Orchestra. And I had one of those seats at the back where all the students sit, and they did the symphony. And it just, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And, you know, it is just a wonderful piece. So that was the first time I heard it. I immediately went and got a recording of it.
And you've chosen the Adagio, the third movement.
Is it the third? Was the second?
Yes, fantastically.
It's the
that
third
opens
movement.
With that lovely clarinet.
Oh,
solo.
It's yes. There's no words to describe it. So
let's listen.
Just
let's
play
listen.
It.
It's always such a decision to have to fade such beautiful music out, but that movement is 13 or 14 minutes long, the third movement of the Second Symphony by Rachmaninoff, and that was played by the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, conducted by David Zinman. And another inspired choice of my guest, Alex Gabriel, the CEO of Cape Town Opera, and I've just seen that in Amsterdam with the Concertgebouw. And it's something I will never forget, hearing that live with that orchestra in that hall.
Wonderful. I'm jealous.
I wanted to talk a bit more, Alex, about your outreach, because these days it's very important to do outreach. And you mentioned students coming here and being fed and carted back and forth. And do you take operas into the schools and elsewhere?
We do. In fact, this year we are putting on the Magic Flute, specifically created for schools. It's a school's production, so it's slightly shorter, but with costumes, the works. We're looking to do it, but we haven't quite confirmed the venue, but it's central, and many schools will be able to come to that. So that's absolutely, and what I just want to say about our social impact programs is that it's fundamental to what we do. It's not something that we're doing just to look good for the funders, because also it's what we're trying to do is a long-term investment, if you know what I'm saying. It's like this very much everything that we do has to have real impact. I don't know. It's that it really feels like you're making a difference. So the kids that are in the Foundation Studio could go and study singing at university and then join our Young Artist Program, which is another social impact program we have, and then either get employed by the company like Brittany Smith has. She's a full-time salaried employee.
And what a career she's having, Alex. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and so she was a young artist with us. She's chosen to stay in South Africa, which I think is wonderful. But others get opportunities overseas and they want to explore that, which is also fantastic. Mm. We also have artistic skills development programs. So all our chorus members, all our young artists, they get voice lessons, they get theory lessons, they get piano lessons. We want to implement technical skills development because, remember, opera is not just opera. It is theater. So the kind of things you learn being behind the scenes in opera, you could apply to musicals. You can apply to, you know, just the stage in all ways. So we've got a little program called Opera Blocks, which is for babies and toddlers, which parents really love. We've got community concerts.
I've often wondered what that must look like.
You should come, Rodney. You'll enjoy it. It's wonderful music. It's all very calm and it's very colorful with beautiful lighting and costumes.
And do the little children like it?
They love it. But they can sort of run around. There's like a nice little floor, you know. It looks like AstroTurf type thing. You know, they can run around and we don't care. It's like it's just meant to be fun and to expose them to something like that. And the parents love it. It's something to do. And what we also do is to bring people in to our shows. So we try and allocate 10% of our tickets for free to groups, you know, whether they be disadvantaged schools or elderly people that can't afford it.
Excellent. And Alex, you've also, Cape Town Opera is known for going international.
We went to China last year. Do you know about that? And we won the Best Artist Award at the Beijing Music Festival, which we have.
Congratulations.
It's in the office. That was quite a learning experience, firstly just negotiating the whole thing. But it was a tremendous success. And so we did Porgy and Bess there, along with a new choral program called Horizons. So that was a great success. And we're looking at doing something next year again, not in China, unconfirmed, but we're always working on it. And as I said, we'll film Aida as well, which we will obviously, if we're happy with it, we'll put it out to promoters.
Yeah. With big productions like Aida, where you need, we were speaking financially earlier, that's in opera where you do need sets and lighting and people, horses, elephants, maybe not that.
Are you trying to stress me out, Ron?
No. But I suppose the reason I said that was that it's something that people can come and look at, even if you don't really like opera. It's a visual spectacle, no matter when it's set, actually.
Exactly.
But it's a visual
spectacle. It will be that. I can guarantee that this will be a visual spectacle.
Yes, and that's in May, isn't it, Alex?
It's in May. It opens on the 23rd. So we're doing 5 performances, sort of day off in between.
Yeah.
And we're doing 2 schools performances as well.
Of the complete opera.
Of the complete opera. That will be with understudies and piano. So it will be without orchestra. So that's the only difference. It will be understudies and piano. But for the rest, it's exactly the show.
Gosh. And it also, when you are casting these big productions like Aida, do you first look locally or do you like the idea, if it's possible, to bring in some famous international
stars? You know, I think we're at the stage now where we are starting to think about that. We've been very careful just because I think it is important for us to support local talent, and that's really why we're here, because this is not a European import. It's not how I see it or how we see it as a company, a European import that we're forcing upon, you know, where it doesn't fit. Like, yes. The singers love singing opera. They are good at it. It brings them joy. They do it with joy. That's something very special about South African singers, is not just the vocal quality. It's the joy with which they sing. I hear it from all our European patrons. Is they'll go to, you know, London and Dusseldorf and wherever, but then they come here. There's just, it makes them so happy to hear and see.
You can see that. Certainly, yeah.
So,
I was going to ask you now for another piece of music. Time races by when you're having fun.
We're having so much fun, Rob.
And here's a bit of a change. Jerome Kern's music.
Jerome Kern's music. So this CD, I had a CD of Kiri Takanawa singing Jerome Kern's songbook, which is how you would expect it with orchestra. And I just loved all his things. And I thought, this is just fantastic. And then I wanted some Jerome Kern music with Sylvia McNair. She's one of the sopranos in that first Mozart, the Domine, that we heard.
Yeah, yes.
And here she was with a Jerome Kern songbook with Andre Previn, who happens to also be a jazz pianist, along with being a fantastic conductor. So I bought it, and this is probably one of my favorite renditions of this song. I mean, you'll hear why. It is just exceptional.
Time and again I've longed for adventure, something to make my heart beat the faster. What did I long for? I never really knew. Finding your love, I found my adventure. Touching your hand, my heart beats the faster. All that I want in all of this world is you. You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the
I hear what you mean, Alex, Sylvia McNair and Andre Previn there, and that song, All the Things You Are, Jerome Kern's song. What a lovely rendition. Now, as we head towards the end of the program, there's some little secret here I want to bring up. I discover you have a lifelong fascination with Formula One.
I do.
That's something different from opera and from the financial world.
Well, in fact, I've got a lifelong fascination with cars. I've always just loved cars. I don't know, I read British car magazine every month, and I've read them since I was 10. I know more about cars than I know about anything, really. I can't fix them, but I can tell you things. And Formula One has been a huge part of that. I've watched, I think, I've maybe missed 5 races in 35 years.
Wow.
And I watched it religiously with my dad, who's 84. We tape it, and we watch it on a Sunday night, so nobody must tell me who won. And that's just a thing we do, and I just love it. I absolutely
Good
love
heavens.
It.
Did I see somewhere very recently they're trying to get Formula One out here to Cape Town?
They have been trying to get one out here forever. It's very expensive, and I don't know. Maybe Mr. McKenzie can get it right, but I think the amount of money the promoters were, I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay, but yeah. In the meantime, you'll sit with your dad and watch.
Indeed,
endlessly.
Yes.
Now, Alex, just as we get to the end now, just looking ahead, you had this huge success with My Fair Lady and with Peter Tureen, but I gather, secretly, the big one for December this year is Cats.
It's going to be Cats, yes. So Peter Tureen is bringing that in. We will be assisting with the production. It's not a full collaboration like we did with My Fair Lady, but we're very excited to be part of it. We love working with Peter Tureen. It's been great for I hope he feels the same.
I'm sure he does. Look, and you fill the opera. How many does a seat?
The Opera House seats 1,500.
1,500.
So I can give you numbers. I can tell you that Sound of Music sold, over the course of the run, 120,000 tickets. Which is about one Taylor Swift concert. But anyway,
it's not going there. But also, Cats is a huge draw card, isn't it, really?
I'm hoping. The movie wasn't.
No, it wasn't, was it?
It was
but I remember seeing it in London and thinking on the West End, you know, I'm seeing Cats. And then being invited here to see it when it was here the last time, all those years ago, and thinking, oh, it'll never be the same. And it was 100 times better than the production.
No, I think it's going to be fabulous. And it is, you know, it's a very popular show, so we're hoping it will be successful.
Well, now, just before we end, Alex, let me tell you thank you very much. It sounds to me as though you have an incredibly exciting job, whether you're dealing with the Chinese or whether you're dealing with local people here, and wonderful singers and a wonderful team. So it sounds to me as though Cape Town Opera is on a roll, as we said earlier. So all strength to your arm.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Rodney. And, you know, we'll keep doing our best. That's all
Absolutely.
We can do.
I'll keep a check on you. What is your last piece of Chopin etude coming
up? This one. So Chopin, the older I get, and, you know, there's always the thing Chopin only wrote for the piano. So, like, he kind of gets moved low down in the, you know, in the steam levels. And the older I get, the more I just think his music is just incredible and has such depth. Anyway, this particular piece is from his etudes, which is technical pieces for the piano, and he writes, I mean, who can make technical pieces sound like these? They're just magnificent. This is a piece I hack through on a regular basis. It's like a meditation for me, but I have to be very clear, I'm playing at about half the speed and with about 75% of the notes. You get, I'm sounding like Donald Rumsfeld now with the known unknowns and stuff, you know, you get pieces that are hard and sound hard. You get pieces that sound hard but are easy, and then you get pieces that sound hard and are actually harder than they sound. And for me personally, this is one of those. It is one of the hardest things, I think, on the piano. And this guy does a tremendous job with it, and it's one of the most beautiful pieces. It's just a bunch of arpeggios up and down the piano, but the chord sequences are really beautiful.
It's Yukio Yokoyama.
Yes, I don't know where I got. I can't remember when and why I bought this disc, but I think he does a tremendous job. So there it is.
It's very spectacular as well. The Etude, Opus 10, number 1 by Chopin, ending. Alex Gabriel, thank you.
Thank you, Rodney.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.